T-Bone Burnett recently released his first album as an artist in 14 years, The True False Identity, also a career-spanning two-disc retrospective of his work. He's been busy not as an artist, but as a producer, with film soundtracks like Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, and hit albums for Counting Crows and The Wallflowers, among many others. He recently toured with some of the fine musicians that recorded the new album, including drummer Jim Keltner and guitarist Mark Rebo. Well, here's some of those live performances today. I started off with the obvious question, what took T-Bone so long, 14 years, to make a new solo album?
Well, there are a lot of answers to that. I mean, the all events that made this possible to make a record converged in this time. I've been in a master's class really for the last 10 years working on plays and movies with Sam Shepard and Wim Wenders and the Coen brothers and the people at Steppenwolf Theater. And you know, I got out of the record business. I decided I had to get out of the record business because I knew it wasn't. Well, I just didn't. It didn't fit, and I didn't know what did fit. But so I just went back to zero. You know, I'd been working hard for 30 years in the record business, and I'd learned a tremendous amount, but I felt I'd come to a wall. So I decided to stop and see what happened. Sometimes stopping is the best thing you can do. And Sam Shepard called up and said, "Come, you want to come to New York and write some music for Tooth of Crime? I've rewritten it." And I said, "Absolutely." And I went up there for about 6 months. And when I was up there, at the premiere of Buried Child, another of Sam's plays that was premiering on Broadway at that same time, I ran into Joel Coen, and he asked me to work on Big Lebowski. And you know, from there, I got to work with, you know, Ralph Stanley and Tony Bennett. And I've worked with all these extraordinary, masterful musicians after, you know, the people I'd worked with before were wonderful musicians too, and I'm very happy to have worked with a lot of the young groups that I've worked with and helped, you know, make their first records or their breakthrough records and things like that. But getting a chance to work with an actual master like Ralph Stanley is irresistible, and I learned a lot. You know, I learned a lot from in these last 10 years, and I felt like after letting music come apart, I had a chance to learn it from the ground up again, and I learned a lot of new things. I've been playing guitar 4 or 5 hours a day, and the reality is that I couldn't get it together any sooner. It's some people like Bob Dylan can be a genius when he's 19 and make the best imaginable record, you know, when he's a kid. But it took me a long time to sort through it all.
Well, yeah, you gotta be inspired. But it's interesting. One of the things I was reading was a quote from your dad or something about don't publish anything till you're 50. Well, what was the context of that?
Well, you know, I was writing all the time. I was growing up in Fort Worth, Texas, under the, you know, the threat of nuclear annihilation from the communists. It seems like we always have to live under some extreme threat in this country. It gets us up in the morning or something, but. But that fact of the B-52s flying overhead all day and all night long, and I just found out last year Stephen Bruton told me that those B-52s were leaving from Fort Worth at Carswell Air Force Base. They would circle the town a couple of times, and they would fly in formation across the Pacific, refuel over the Pacific, then drop their bombs in Vietnam, then fly back to Fort Worth. So that war was being fought from my hometown, you know. And it just drove me into myself, and I started writing. My dad said, "Well, are you planning to be a writer?" And I said, "Well, I think I am." And he said, "Well, then don't publish anything till you're 50, because you won't know what you're talking about." And you know, he was right. I didn't appreciate it at the time. I was 8 years old or something like that. But,
well, but, now how does that make you look back at? You've also released this wonderful Essential T-Bone collection of you know, a double album of all the work with the Alpha Band and Coward Brothers, you know, everything you've done, solo albums. Is that a summation of that period?
No, it's a way of looking at it. You know, all of those records are going to come out in the not too distant future. We're going to put out Proof Through the Night, and we're going to put out.
That's good news.
Yeah, we're going to put all this stuff out. I know there's been some consternation in some quarters that I went back and some of these things and reworked them. But you know, I got hip to that when Sam was reworking Tooth of Crime, which was one of his seminal plays. And I said, hey, man, how do you do it? How come you're rewriting that? And he said, well, because I know so much more about what I was talking about now than I did then. And as I approached this stuff, there were things that I realized, oh, man, I know a lot more about this. So I view these songs and these records as living things, and it's not like one thing's going to replace the other and the other's going to never see the light of day. Right. It's all going to be out there. That's one of the beauties of the World Wide Web is there's been a disruption and distribution, you know, and things, and the shape of things is getting ready to change profoundly.
T-Bone Burnett is our guest, and the new album is called The True False Identity. And I was thinking about this, as you know, we've talked to many people you've produced over the years, particularly some of the younger bands, and we said, well, what does T-Bone do in the studios? And they'll give answers like, well, he'll show me that in this particular part, I only need to play the three middle strings of the guitar because that's where it sonically fits in. do you deal with people's art as they're making records? Do you say, no, that song doesn't cut it here? Or do you just deal sonically with other people?
I do all of that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, the producer is the proxy for the audience. So you're trying to be a really great listener, first of all. And you know, songwriters, when they start, you know, writing a song in their bedrooms, they're playing everything. They're imagining the whole band in their heads, and especially true with young bands, the guitar players will come in and play as if there's no one else in the band. So I always try to break parts out, give people, you know, specific right. things to do, clear things up in a way so that each part is the strongest. And then, you know, you look at keys, you look at every single part of the thing that makes it compelling. Because what we're all trying to do is get over. You know, at the bottom, at the very epicenter of the process is the fact that we're storytelling. We're telling stories and we're communicating. It's all about communication, and that's what you try to do as a producer. You try to clear up the lines of communication between the audience and the artist in every way.
Well, it brings me to the old quote about a lawyer who represents himself as a fool for a client. What's it like to produce yourself? How do you maintain that audience aspect?
Well, I may be foolish producing myself, but I would feel even more foolish if I had a lawyer producing me. I have these musicians who I trust absolutely. I never tell them what to play. In fact, one of my beliefs is, or creeds, I suppose you could say, of production is that I don't care what anybody plays, I just care who's playing it.
Hmm.
So if you get the right person in the studio, it's really best to get out of his way and let him communicate the way he's going to, let him play the thing. Because playing music and singing music is about freedom and, you know, letting it happen, Captain.
And those people, are a lot of the same people out on the road with you, Jim Keltner, Kifis Ciancia?
Ciancia, I think.
Ciancia. Mark Rebo.
That's right.
Who sounds fabulous all over this record. And I guess Dennis Crouch is
Dennis
playing the
Crouch,
bass.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great people.
Yeah, well, they're all, you know, I feel like I went to sleep and woke up in Miles Davis's band in 1968 or something. Yeah. They're that level of musicians. And I don't mean to put any fine coats on myself either in that regard, because, I mean, I've always been the worst guy in every band I've ever been in. It's a policy of mine, you know. I wouldn't want to be in any band that I wasn't the worst guy in.
Well, one of the cool tracks on this, and I'm assuming you do it live, I'd love if we could hear a live full band version of Zombieland, which has this clearly whatever developed in the studio was such a cool sound as far as percussion is concerned and everything on this. How did it evolve in the studio?
That was one of the first things we did, and it just started with Carla playing that clack, We didn't really have anything. I had the lyrics, and I had the beginning of a sense of a melody. I mean, there's in every lyric, in every sentence, in every utterance is a melody and a cadence and a tempo. You can translate inflection into melody. Hmm. So I had that sort of sense of the way the thing would. The story I was trying to tell, and then Carla did that clacking thing, and then it just was improvised. It just happened that way.
And it sounds much like that on stage.
Well, it's improvised every night. It's an improvisational band, to be sure.
Well, let's check out this version of Zombieland, T-Bone Burnett and this great band.
Accentuate the positive, destroy all the negative, before the black mass media get a hold of them. Sniffing that frog powder, drinking that genius juice, shooting that monkey blood. into a dark mojo. You want to know, but you don't know. You want to know, but you don't know. We're gonna stomp in zombie land, devil feet in zombie land. We're gonna stomp the devil feet down in zombie land. We're gonna stomp in zombie land, devil feet in zombie land. We're gonna stomp the devil feet in zombie land. We're gonna stomp the devil.
Zombieland, live in concert from our guest T-Bone Burnett. More of our conversation coming up on the World Cafe. More with T-Bone Burnett today. We'll get to more live performances in studio and on stage with our guest. As we pick up our conversation, I asked T-Bone about the vintage instruments and amplifiers he brought into the studio for our session.
This guitar is probably from 1951 or two. Yeah, it's probably from 1952. It's a K-161. It's the kind of guitar Jimmy Reed used to play. And Jimmy Reed was all of our... In Texas growing up, he was like the Beatles before the Beatles and was an avatar for us. And I was up in Buffalo, New York or somewhere, and this guy came and said, "Hey, man, look at this guitar. I'll sell it to you for $100." And that was back in 20 years ago. I haven't let go of it since.
Smart man.
And, and you know, all of this stuff that, you know, electronics hasn't gotten any better. The digital, while it's better in many ways, it's certainly better for editing. It doesn't sound nearly as good as analog did, and we do almost everything we do in analog, even though it ends up in digital. And we hyper-saturate it with overtone and tone. We've taken a lot of care in creating a new sound that sounds exciting in the technology that we're working with today.
Well, you can hear the hum of the amps, so you want to do one?
Yeah, this is maybe the first song I wrote for this, first song I finished for this record, True False Identity. It's called A Lonely Man. Oh, and then I left it off the record and made it the end title song for Wim Wenders' film, Don't Come Knockin'. Thank you.
lost his only love. It's hiding in his system like a drug. It's just around the corner there. It's hiding from him everywhere. He's a lonely man who's lost his love. His wildest dream. Nothing is to be as it once seemed. He hid it with the greatest care, and now he can't remember where. He's a lonely man who's lost his dream. To blame. He knows that love's no war, that life's no game. He has an anger in his soul that holds to love and won't let go. He's a lonely man who finds no blame.
For that on the True False Identity. I guess it'll be on the soundtrack of Wim Wenders film?
Yeah, it will be.
Now, you mentioned that that song was one of the first ones you wrote. What was your process in getting back into writing? Because if you hadn't been thinking about that for all that period of time, I would think those are different muscles.
Well, it was, you know, since when I started writing for the theater, it was very different because you were writing for a character.
Right.
In someone else's voice, you know, in the character's voice, and then really in Sam's voice, and it had to make sense as a part of the play. So there was a great deal of freedom in that, and then there was a great deal of sonic experimentation to do, because in the theater, the voice, you can't, the music has to be powerful, but it can't overwhelm the spoken word. So you have to approach music with a whole different set of requirements or needs than you approach music working in the record business, you know. So really it just led to tremendous amounts of freedom, every successive step did. And I got to go back over the history of the last century and listen to all the gospel music for the Lady Killers and listen to all the, you know, the traditional American music for Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And then listen to all the century before his music for Cold Mountain. So it really has, when I say it's been a master's class, I mean that. I mean, you couldn't pay for this, for the schooling I've received.
Did you play music during the sessions for people? Did you play recorded music?
Oh, yeah, we watched a lot of things. All these great DVDs have come out now, you know, the English, the American Folk Blues DVDs and Howlin' Wolf DVDs, and, you know, so you can see these people. When I was a kid, and you know, when I first would get a Skip James record, I thought Skip, you know, there was that great Skip James record recorded in 1931. You know, and in 1965, when I was getting into playing music, 1931 seemed like centuries ago. And it was difficult to find those things because they weren't widely distributed. They weren't manufactured in great quantities, and they weren't distributed widely. Today, you can go on the World Wide Web and you can hear every song Skip James ever thought about singing, you know, and I mean, you know, all the outtakes, everything, you know, everything that's ever recorded on him. So there are great advantages today to this new means of distribution. And
I wanted to play another live performance of Hollywood Mecca of the movies. And it's interesting. You've had such incredible success in Hollywood, but it doesn't. It's not the Hollywood I see so much on the red carpet, you know? It seems like a different aspect of making movies, which has been... your experience there seems to have been pretty good.
Great.
Yeah.
No, I love Hollywood. Yeah. I do. You know, people, when people talk about how horrible Los Angeles is, I say, you know, you're exactly right. You should please don't come.
Yeah.
Cuz there're way too many people there already. But in fact, I don't ever use the word LA. I call it Los Angeles because it has to be treated with respect. It's an important American city, whether people want to, denigrate it or not. It's easy to put down there, it's the end of the migration. It's as far west as we could migrate in our manifest destiny, and it's a lot of thing. There are a lot of crazy things happen there, but all gods are worshipped there. All new ideas come there to be tried out. The smartest people in the world are coming through all the time, and it's an incredible, powerful place with mountains and the ocean, and
And some of that aspect is in this song.
Well, this song's more about Hollywood, and it comes from the title comes from Blaise Cendrars, who was I don't know if you're familiar with Blaise Cendrars, but he was a brilliant French poet in the early part of the last century, and then he turned into a journalist. He quit writing poetry and started writing journalism, and he wrote a travelogue called Hollywood, Mecca of the Movies. And he talks about Los Angeles in this way. He said, all great cities are built on elephant graveyards because the elephants know the inhabitable places. And they're all built on seven hills. And he talks a lot about the reasons Los Angeles and Hollywood came into existence. But he says, the thing about Hollywood is it's behind a wall and a gate, and there's always a Nazi at the gate. And if you can get through the gate, then you can actually see what's there. So this Hollywood Mecca of the Movies is more of a song about having gotten through the gate and really seeing what's there.
Hollywood Mecca of the Movies.
To love. last forever. What a town, what a great town.
Hollywood Mecca for the movies and performance from T-Bone Burnett. And our thanks to T-Bone for joining us today. His new album is called The True False Identity, and it's at our website at our CD store there. That's worldcafe.npr.org.